It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch the ball, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live. I am back. What a week to miss out talking sports. I missed you, Mike.
Thank you.
I missed having the chance to rant about the Leafs, the Blue Jays, everything in the sports world. I realize I have so much to say each week about sports, and without a podcast, I'm just saying these things in my head or to my wife who does not care. I'm just like your regular sports psycho that we've talked about in the past, Mike. But a huge thank you to Clay for stepping in for me last week. You did an amazing job. The feedback was great. So hats off to you, Clay. But we have lots of great sports to discuss this week, including the Leafs knocked out again. Round two begins with the Battle of Alberta. The NBA moves on to the conference finals. The Jays bats are ice cold. And KH Lee takes home the Byron Nelson Classic. But first, Mike, how was your week?
Couldn't help but notice that the compliments you were handing out ended with Clay, began and ended with Clay.
You were great.
No, you know what? Forget great, it. Mike. Forget
you're,
it.
You stepped right in. You led the show.
I don't want your pity. Congrats. Horse. I don't want them. Welcome back. Good to see you. Good week. Took advantage a few times of the beautiful weather we had here in the GTA. Golf three times, got a lot of yard work done. But more importantly, got out on the course, played nine on Tuesday, 18 Thursday and Sunday. So,
and?
Well, I played, yeah.
You played? You were out there physically?
Out there.
You're a walking or cart guy?
I walked to the cart.
Oh, good.
So they had me set up on Sunday morning, and my bag was on a walking cart. And I called the pro over, and I was like, "Who do you think I am? Don't do this again." They go on the riding cart, but no, it was good. Good to be out there, and you know, I'm in a different tour than you are.
Sure,
was under 100 both rounds, which was good. So a good start off the bat.
That's good.
That was important. But I just found like I was getting, I'd get a par, like a good par. And then I get double the next hole. So I just got to find a little more consistency. Yeah. As somebody who doesn't practice a lot.
Maybe don't try those risky shots. Play it easy. Play it simple.
There are no risky shots with me. I just want to hit it as straight as possible and aim for the hole. So I don't get into the shot shaping, if you will. But no, it was good. It was great weather and good to be out on the course and get some stuff done around the house. And looks like later this week we're going to have some good weather again, so hope to be out there.
Yeah, I didn't get to golf last week. I was away for my real job work. That's why I wasn't on the podcast, and I haven't golfed in over 10, 11 days now, which is a lot for me when the weather's good. Not even a range session, so I'm due, so got to get back into it this week, tighten up the game, get ready to go. I got a couple matches already planned with some friends this week. So it's important. I need to dial it in, tune up the old driver to get it straight, get those wedges nice and floppy, no butter knives out there. So lots to work on this week. I'll give the full update on if I'm able to find that touch and find that game again.
The Kirkland sand wedge on fire to start the year.
I bet.
Anything like 30 yards in, beautiful.
And it smells like chocolate chip muffins that they sell at the back there, right?
I wish that was true.
The biggest muffins ever at Costco. Yeah,
I wish
that massive. Was true. Could feed a family. So I was away for, as I mentioned, a huge week in the sports world, but more importantly, the Maple Leafs world. And we've talked about it before. I'm a sports psycho, especially when it comes to the Maple Leafs. I like to just kind of keep in my basement for big games and stay really focused, be able to yell whatever I need to yell. Pucks in deep, block that shot, put it on net. What are you doing, Nylander? Go get it. All those types of things. I'm that guy. But this past week, I had to watch two Leaf games, game five and game seven, with some people that I I'm not that close with or don't know me that well. And it was just an interesting situation. Started, I happened to be in Whistler last week. So game five, was able to get out after our little work conference situation, find the closest little bar and get to it with two or three other Leaf fans. But going in, I don't know, are these guys diehard Leaf fans? Are they casual? Are they going to think I'm weird for all the things I was saying? We had the TV on at this bar, but no sound. They were playing 90s alternative rock the whole time. I didn't care. I was jumping up and down, screaming, high-fiving people. That's the game. The Leafs come back, tied it up, and then Matthews scores the game-winning goal late in the third. We're up 3-2. Morale's high. Everyone is buzzing. You know, the Leafs fans anyway, the Montreal Canadian fans that were there, they didn't really care, but I was in a great mood. Things were great. I'm like, we're going to wrap this up on the way back coming home. It's going to be good. Thursday's game six. I'm actually flying home as the puck's just about to drop. I had to do the old record, turn my phone off, headphones in, drive home. Jump right down to the basement and jump into it. And that's the disappointing overtime loss. But we'll get into that. And then game seven, I'm at a baseball tournament in lovely Guelph, Ontario, for my son. So I was with, this is a new team that he's on and new parents that I don't really know. They sure as hell don't know me. And I am just a stress ball. First two periods, they go down 2-1. We're in this like big lobby hall area with a small little TV on. And I'm like, this is not how I should be watching the biggest moment in the last 20 years for the Leafs. So I quickly got my son and we got out of there and went upstairs to the hotel room and quietly watched the third together. And it just didn't end well. And there was some screaming and yelling and some curse words. So it was a tough scene, but we'll get into more of that later.
Oh, I feel your pain.
Cool scene was actually on Saturday in the baseball for my son. We were playing this game and it was the end of the round robin. So if we win the baseball game, we go to the semifinals on Sunday morning. If we lose the baseball game, we have to play like a play-in game on Saturday night. Well, game seven is going on. So I'm stressing out here. I'm like, boys, you guys got to win this game. You have no idea. I am not sitting at a ballpark for game seven here watching the Leafs game on my phone for crying out loud while I'm watching you guys. So it was an interesting situation. Our team is down by one in the bottom half of the last inning. Two outs, two on. Who comes up to plate? My son. I am just a ball of nerves. And for any of you that, you know, watch your kids play sports, hockey's kind of fluid, right? The kids are skating around, the puck comes in, boom, 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 it's done. Baseball, the spotlight's on your kid when he's at the plate. Everyone's watching him, so you feel like you're literally trying to swing with them. So two on, two out, we're down by one. We need the win. Tie's not good enough. My son slaps a single over a leaping third baseman into left field. Two runs score. We win the game. Back to the hotel for game seven. I was jacked. What a proud moment. I gave that kid the biggest bear hug ever. I swear, I know he's only 8 years old, but I almost offered him a beer and said, you deserve this one, buddy. Have an ice cold one. But he didn't want it. He just wanted to get back to the swimming pool. He didn't really care. But I was like, hey, we got to watch game seven here. It's super important. But we're going to get into that. We got talked Leafs. We got lots to talk about. Playoffs in the NHL, playoffs in baseball. And I'm happy to be back on the podcast. Happy to be talking sports with you, Mike, because you're awesome. So, hey, everyone, stick around after this break because we got lots more to talk about. Well, it's been 48 hours for me to collect my thoughts on the boys in blue and white, and that will be our T1. The Toronto Maple Leafs lost both games 6-7 to lose their first round series to the Tampa Bay Lightning, ending their chance at the Stanley Cup and continuing their streak of 18 years without a first round series win. Mike, as an outsider, did you think the Leafs were going to win this series?
I think we said at the start of the playoffs, this series in particular, a very good team was going to advance and a very good team was going to be eliminated. And that's what happened. I felt there were times, the first four games, and we touched on this last week, neither team could grab any momentum. Leafs were real good in games 1 and 3, Tampa in 2 and 4. And then game 5, 6, and 7 were much tighter affairs, obviously. And, you know, one team's got to lose, one team's got to win. I would not have been shocked if Toronto advanced. I believe they played very well this playoff round. Game 6, you know, there was a chance to put it away. It didn't happen. Penalties got the better of them there, and Tampa got back in the game on the power play. But, you know, for me, as someone with no real emotion in it, it just felt different to me. The Columbus series 2 years ago, Montreal last year, those felt like letdowns, disappointments, if you will. This was different. This team played well. All the big guys produced. Campbell was solid. They lost to the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. It's a tough way to go out, but they played well, and they, had they advanced, would have deservedly advanced.
Yeah, and they would have been one of the top teams going into the second round as well. And you know what? Just thinking back on it now, having that 3-2 lead in the series after winning game 5, which was such an important win to get them moving in the right direction, it's exactly where they wanted to be. Having the chance to close it out in game 6. Now, speaking about game 6 first, you know, they went down early again, giving up these early goals in these games. It's tough to always battle back. You don't see too many teams that are able to win series when they're losing games in the first period. And it takes a lot out of you to battle back to get tied even before you get a chance to win. And it's not the start they wanted in game 6. But the team played great. You know, John Tavares getting the 2 goals less than a minute apart. It was a perfect storyline. It would have been a fairy tale ending for him to score those 2 goals and be the guy that came back home to play for his hometown team and get them through that first round and into the second. It was all setting up perfectly for them. And then we had the high sticks to put the 5-on-3. Now, the first high stick, I know it didn't touch his face. It hit him in the shoulder. I get it. But it's tough for the ref. There's a lot going on. They don't have that visibility to see every single play with a stick when it comes to a penalty versus where the puck is, because they're focused on the puck. Yes, the player kind of jolted his head back, and it did look like he clipped him in the face. So it is what it is, a penalty. Your stick still shouldn't be that high. Then the second one was behind the Tampa Bay Lightning net. It was on the penalty kill. Kerfoot did not need to be in that deep anymore. He got the puck in deep. Get out. Get reset. 5-on-4, let's kill it. You don't need to be battling down low with Hedman, who is 10 inches taller than Kerfoot. There's no need for his stick to be that high. And really, he's lucky it was only 2 and not 4 if he had to cut him. So really, I say it's on the Maple Leafs to be down 5-3 or down on a PK on a 5-on-3 at that point with 2 silly penalties. And of course, Tampa Bay was going to score and tie, and Kucherov did that no problem. Now we move into the overtime. The Leafs played really strong. They weren't scared. They had their chances to win. We talked about Kerfoot again, had that breakaway opportunity. I felt it was right there. It was right there. The only thing for me, diehard Leaf fan, longtime Leaf fan, I just can't visualize a Maple Leaf with a historic playoff moment. I can't see it in my head. And that's what I was thinking during that overtime. We've seen the Gilmore in 93 with the wraparound goal. We've seen Nikolai Borisheski with the tip versus the Red Wings in overtime to get past them. But with this group, I just can't see it. None of these players have that in them. None of them have that heroic moment that's coming. And I knew Tampa Bay was going to find a way to score in overtime on home ice. And sure, of course, they did. It was scrambly, punched it through Campbell's legs. But did you think that game 6 was the one that they messed up and they should have won to end the season, end the series?
Yeah, I mean, that argument's there. I don't know if messed up would be the correct, you know, way of putting it. It was, you know, a penalty that led to a goal. Maybe, you know, 2 penalties at the wrong time, inopportune time. And that's the thing, right? That's the difference with a team like Tampa Bay. You make those mistakes, they typically punish you for them. That's why they are the two-time defending champs. But the one, just to touch on your earlier point, because I thought it was worth mentioning, going down, the Leafs responded in a couple games. And that's not something, you know, maybe you've seen in previous years. And it kind of relates to my earlier point that this was different.
Right. Which brings us to game seven. And it was one of those things where after you got over game six and what had happened, and you're like, hey, listen, we got game seven, winner take all, one game on home ice. Maybe your thought is this is the perfect spot for them. This is exactly where they need to be. But I was saying it was a must to score that first goal and set the tone, because we couldn't be in the same situation, Mike, where they were down and having to battle back. Tampa Bay scores that first goal. My first thought is if Tampa Bay gets the next one to make it 2-0, it's over. Because game sevens, you're lucky if you get, you know, four total goals in the game. Teams just lock it up. You got Vasilevskiy in net. He's had an up and down series. He wasn't going to let the Leafs crawl back into it. Nick Paul became a hero. He's a local Mississauga boy. The first goal was that 3-on-2 that should have had the Leafs being maybe a little bit more aggressive and going towards him, not letting the shot and the tap in. His second goal just kind of sunk the Leafs. I felt it. They tied up 1-1. They were pressing to get the lead, and kind of a scrambly play where the Leafs just need to get the puck out of the zone and things would have been fine. It was close to the blue line. And, you know, speaking back about the sports psycho here, I'm yelling all the time, get the puck out, get the puck out. Because once you get past that blue line, you can take a deep breath. They got to regroup. They just couldn't get it out. And Paul brings it back in. Nice play, kicking it from his feet up to his stick and put it in. And you go to the third period down by one against Vasilevskiy, the best goalie in the world. Easily best goalie in the world. All those Leafs ghosts just sitting there with resting on the players' shoulders. I knew there wouldn't be a comeback. I did not have a good feeling going in that third period, especially as time winded down. We were down to 6 minutes and then three, and then we finally pulled a goalie at two, and it just wasn't going to happen. The chances, there was a few by the Leafs, but the big boys were all shut down, and they didn't really get a chance to score in game seven.
Yeah, that instance where Matthews, I think it was, he hit the post, right? And 9 seconds later, Paul scores to make it 2-1. I mean, that, you know, unfortunate that the puck bounces that way sometimes, but that's the playoffs, right? It just felt in the third period too, you know, and you can agree or disagree, a much better hockey mind than me, but it just felt like Tampa really clogged things up and shut it down, and there wasn't a ton of room to do anything.
But that's what champions do, and they knew how to do that. They knew. We're missing Point, our arguably one of our best players.
Yeah.
We have the best goalie, and we have a 2-1 lead with 20 minutes to go. Shut it down, and they did. So, you know, now the thought is, what's next for the Maple Leafs, right? We've been obviously in the situation quite a few times, and last year it was all, let's fast forward right to the playoffs and go back with it with this same group. So, you know, my first thoughts were fire Dubas, fire Keefe, bring in Barry Trotz. Don't re-sign Spezza. Don't bring back Simmons. Don't bring back Gio. Trade Muzzin. Trade Nylander. And keep a little bit of the core, and let's start to rebuild, figure out what we're going to do in net. That was my first thought. But after some time, I started really thinking about it. The Leafs were the better team in the series. But Tampa Bay's experience, we mentioned, their goaltending, that's what put them over the top. This was the worst possible matchup for the Maple Leafs. As you mentioned, any other team that made the playoffs, they would have won the series, I think, if they had played this way. The one team they couldn't beat was Tampa Bay, who just knew how to control the series and knew how to control these games. They're back-to-back champs, for crying out loud, and they were healthy. No big injuries for them. They were able to go through the series pretty good with their full lineup till the end there when Point was injured, and that was a bad recipe for the Maple Leafs. Now, for those of you that are Maple Leafs fans, but also Blue Jays fans, you might know this history. The Blue Jays won the AL East division in 1985 and 1989. For 5 years, they were one of the top teams in the MLB, but never, never could get to the World Series. Couldn't get past those pesky Oakland A's. And it was always, well, good team, but couldn't get over the hump. And instead of going back to the well with the same team time and time again, Pat Gillick knew he needed to make a change, the Blue Jays general manager, if he wanted to get this Jays core team into the World Series. So what did he do? He pulled the trigger on the biggest trade in franchise history, bringing in Roberto Alomar and Joe Carter in 1990 and sending two fan favorites and players that were key for those winning teams back the other way, trading both Tony Fernandez and Fred McGriff. My question is, will Dubas have his Pat Gillick moment here this summer and make a move to put the Blue Jays past it? There will be change, the Maple Leafs past the first round, I should say. There will be changes, but I don't think a full house cleaning is needed for the Maple Leafs.
No, I think that would be incredibly foolish. I don't think this requires drastic change. To the point I made earlier, it is a much different exit than the previous 2 years. This is a good team. They won 54 games, 115 points in the regular season. And I know we look past that because all we care about seemingly is the playoffs, but you need to put the whole thing into perspective. And there will be changes like everything in every sport, every offseason, and especially in a hard cap league, decisions need to be made, right? But it's a good team, and eventually the levee's going to break.
Love it. Now that that is out of the way, we can get back into some uplifting sports talk and move on. There were four other Game 7s in the first round of the NHL playoffs, and that will be our T2. Round 2 will be underway this week as the Hurricanes take on the Rangers. The Lightning battle the Panthers, while in the West we have the Avalanche and Blues. But all eyes in Canada will be on the Battle of Alberta between the Oilers and Flames. Mike, your thoughts on Game 7s in the NHL and the upcoming second round?
Unbelievable. You know, I've felt that this playoffs have been real good. There's been a lot of real good games, performances, storylines. I know we argue we don't like this format, but 5 of the 8 series go to Game 7 in the first round. Hard to kind of argue that, but I mean, some really exciting hockey. You know, team I kind of picked to go deep in the East, the Rangers down 3-1 to Pittsburgh, come back, win 3 straight to win the series. Couple, Zibanejad's been good, Shesterkin good for the Rangers. I know they're Pens were without Crosby. What happens now with the trio there in Pittsburgh? We'll see. I'm trying to think what else off the top of my head really grabbed me in those series. Carolina Boston was good too.
Great. Yeah. I agree. Great. And it's the greatest thing in sports is NHL Game 7s. I don't know if anything else really can compete with it. It's one game. The intensity level is just ramped right up every play, every shift. You can feel the nerves for the players. You mentioned two of them going into overtime. One was only by one goal. They were all great games, and either team could have won it in all 5 of those Game 7s. Oilers, their top players stepped up. McDavid, he just said, I'm not going to let these guys lose anymore. I'm moving us on to the second round, and he did that. The Flames found a way with, getting one kind of by a goaltender that had stopped 60-plus shots in Ottinger. So Johnny Hockey steps up, that high harder off the goalie's head, almost an in. For you kids out there, just remember, hey, when you're in overtime, get the puck on net. Anything can happen. You never know. It could bounce in. It could sneak through a goalie's glove. So there's always ways to score in overtime. That's the great thing about this game, and it ends so quickly. The Rangers, you talked about, they get a power play in overtime. Panarin scores kind of through a screen. It's tough for the Penguins. That's the team I think I feel, you know, obviously for the Leafs, I feel bad, but Penguins would be the second one because they were up 3-1 in the series. Crosby was having this great playoff. Then he gets hurt. He comes back and plays again. They're missing two of their starting goalies. They got the third string goalie who's eating spicy pork and broccoli in between overtimes. He's got to run the table for 4 games. They finally get Jari back for Game 7, and it's just too late. The Rangers had taken over the series. So Game 7s, though, they're great. I feel we're gonna have, you know, 4-5 more maybe within the playoffs here still to come. So I'm looking forward to the second round.
Yeah, second round. These matchups are good. You got the Battle of Florida, the Battle of Alberta, as you said. Is that
which one you want to start with first, Mike? Let's break it down a good one. Let's give the people some winners, too.
Let's go east to west.
You got it.
So, you know, we kind of touched on Tampa, and I think the Brayden Point, you know, injury is going to, depending on how long he's gone for, that could be crucial to this series. Florida gets their first playoff series win since 93, you know, kind of erase those mistakes from last year. Battled with Washington. You know, some people may look at that on the surface and be like, well, they were 1-8, but, you know, let's not forget, like I said last week, Washington was 100.8 seed. That one, you know what? It's hard for me to pick against Tampa. Florida's still a fairly young team. If Vasilevsky can pick it up a bit still, like he kind of did later part of the series against Toronto, I like them to take out Florida in six.
Ooh.
I'm saying, yeah, yeah.
I like it. Well, I now hate the Lightning, and I'm sick of seeing them win. I like Stamkos. I do like Stamkos, but that's it. Perry, Kucherov, Maroon, Vasilevsky, yuck. I'm done seeing them. The blue and white jerseys, too. It's just an extra dagger in my heart. Panthers did not play good in round one, but they've moved on, and that's what teams need. Teams that win the Stanley Cup, they might look back and say, you know, we didn't even play good in that round, but we snuck by, and that was a, uh-oh, we better get our stuff together here moment. Maybe that was the case for the Panthers here in round one against the Capitals. A sense of relief, like, hey, we got through it, but we gotta get it together. They lost to Tampa Bay last year, and you know they're going to want to prove themselves to the Tampa Bay Lightning, the former Stanley Cup champions, their neighbors in the state of Florida. And I think Florida is ripe for a good run here. And if they can get cooking, they might be able to run it right to a cup final. So I like the Panthers in six.
Okay. Rangers, Carolina. This should be a pretty good series. I think momentum is riding hot for the Rangers. Three in a row. The Garden's a great venue for playoff hockey. I picked them earlier a couple weeks ago in my Stanley Cup prediction. So I got to roll with them again. I like them in six games over the Hurricanes.
Okay. Okay. I might agree with you, Mike, here, because the Hurricanes are really, they're a good team. They are a good team. They have a really good system, though.
Yeah.
Rod Brind'Amour, head coach, does a great job, keeps those guys together. They got some really great players, but no superstar that's going to take over the game. No Vezina type goaltender. So they're really just a solid team that play well together and stick together. And that does go a long way, but the Rangers needed to get past that first round. And I think now they're going to fly. They seem to get it together. Their offense is clicking. Their special teams is working. We know Shesterkin, he's a Vezina type of goalie. Just like I mentioned, they've got that guy. So if he can stand on his head, the offense can get going. I like the Rangers to sneak by Carolina here. I think that Panarin's going to have a big series after getting that OT winner in game seven. He's going to be at the top of his game. So I also like the New York Rangers in six games.
Nice. Where you want to go first, Colorado, St. Louis, or the Battle of
Colorado? Okay. Save the big one for the end.
Okay. I think this is going to be a really good series. Colorado obviously has had some time to rest here after their first round sweep. Blues are a good team, and I was expecting a little more from the Wild in that series, but Perron, O'Reilly, Tarasenko, five goals each in the first round. I love Ryan O'Reilly. I think he's a fantastic player. Jordan Binnington gets the net back, goes 3-0 after taking over from Husso, and I'm saying Blues and seven, Stark.
Holy smokes, Mike. I could not disagree with you more.
Hey, great.
This is going to be an awful series. Colorado's just way too good. And now they're well-rested. And now they're well-prepared. And St. Louis is just old. And they have to battle to win. They won't be able to keep up. Once they get down two games right away off the hop, they're going to be just giving up, looking for the next vacation destination. I think that Binnington is a huge question mark. Yes, he jumped back in net and got them to win the series, but there's no guarantees he even lasts two games in this series. And he'll be back out and back on the bench, pouting like he usually does. Colorado in five.
Oh, what the hell do I know? Battle of Alberta. I think this is going to be
The best.
The best of the four series. Calgary has been my pick for weeks. I can't go against them. I think Markstrom has a significant Calgary with Markstrom has a significant edge in goal. Defensively, they're a strong team and they can score. If they can work to negate McDavid and Dreisaitl, I think that's going to go a long way in helping them. This one, you know, maybe goes the distance, but I like Calgary in six.
Okay. I think you're right. I think the storyline is great offense versus great goaltending and defensive strategy by Daryl Sutter. The edge for me goes to the Oilers based on how they played in the first round. I think the Oilers actually played really well in the first round, but the Kings just was a bad matchup for them, and that's the only reason why it went seven games. That and Mike Smith had a night where he was just lost in the net early in the series. But otherwise, the Oilers were pretty dominant, and they played great hockey, and they played desperate hockey. Now, they need to keep that desperate feeling going in the second round to keep going, and I think McDavid knows that. Draisaitl a little banged up, but the Oilers should still be very good. And the other thing to think about here is both these teams went to Game 7. None of them were sitting around resting, waiting for the other. So it's going to be a quick turnaround for both, and I like the Oilers to come out hot. I like the Oilers to really press the game and make it a speed game while Calgary tries to slow it down, which might make for a lot of special team opportunities for the Oilers with a great power play. Darnell Nurse has learned his lesson. He's not going to do anything stupid again. McDavid is going to be the star of this series, might be the star of the playoffs if he can keep pushing them through. It's going to be close. It's going to be great. It's going to be physical. It's going to be fast. But I like the Oilers in seven.
Do you think, just quickly before we move on, do you think, I know they're two entirely different teams, but Edmonton, LA, Woodcroft, McClellan, similar styles for the teams? Do you think that factors in at all?
I think so. I think it might. I think there might be some challenges that Sutter's going to throw at them. That's why I don't think it's going to be a quick series. But I think that the Oilers should have enough speed and offense, more so than what Dallas had against Calgary, to give the Flames a lot of trouble. And if the Oilers do get up two goals, Calgary doesn't have that, you know, what Toronto did to get back in those games. So if they get up early, lights out for the Flames. The NBA superstars have stepped up in round two, and the game sevens were a whooping. And that will be our T3. The conference finals are set between the Boston Celtics and Miami Heat in the East, and the Dallas Mavericks and Golden State Warriors in the West. Both the Mavs and Celtics showed their dominance in their respective Game 7s and will try to ride that wave into the next round. Mike, did your Bucks not show up for Game 7?
I don't know if it's a case of not showing up, but what was it, 22 three-pointers may have been the difference? I don't know. It's a hell of a performance. Phoenix and Milwaukee, you know, NBA finalists from last year, both up 3-2 in their series. Both go to Game 7, and both get blown out in Game 7. It was kind of the opposite of the hockey, right? The Game 7s were tighter in the NBA. I was not expecting this from either game. Certainly expected Phoenix to get through. And in Boston-Milwaukee, you know, we touched on last week, I said pretty much what I said last year, whoever kind of got through this series was probably going to go. And Boston just put on a clinic in Game 7 and deservedly moves on to the conference finals against Miami. So,
yeah, and that's going to be a great series. Boston went 2-1 against the Heat during the season. Butler, though, for the Heat, he's averaging 29.6 points over his last 10 games here in the playoffs, playing some great basketball. Kyle Lowry, still questionable with that hamstring issue. He'll be a big factor if he can or cannot play. Might set the tone a little bit different for the Heat. The Celtics combo of Tatum and Brown should be enough to keep up offensively with the Heat. The difference will be who owns the boards and can stop those, you know, 8 to 10 point runs that some of these teams like to go on. And Miami, I don't know, they're just You know they're going to be the favorite, obviously, with Butler and the kind of the star power that they have. They're going to have home court advantage, but I'm not counting out this Boston team. They are a scrappy team. They showed it coming back against the Bucks, being down 3-2. They don't have the big names, but they got a great team. And we talked about, you know, with the hockey and some of these teams, when they come together and gel, they seem to get past those tougher superstar type of teams. And with only three teams left, yeah, Boston might not have much of the names, but I like them. And for that, I'm going to take the Celtics in seven.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, if Kyle Lowry can play, that obviously makes a significant difference. But I agree with you. I kind of stick by what I said. Boston-Milwaukee winner was going to probably get through to the final. That was my thought, and I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, the West is a little bit different because Golden State seems to be, you know, turning back the clock about 5 years here and have that magic and are just steamrolling teams. The Warriors are a high-paced team. Well, Dallas is kind of slow and a little bit more detailed in what they do. G-State can shoot the threes and had the eighth best field goal percentage in the NBA this year. Well, Dallas was 18th in that stat and only has Luka shooting threes right now. And I don't know if he can keep up with the Splash Brothers. Draymond is going to just own the boards. And if he stays in the games and doesn't get teed up and kicked out, there's no one on the Mavs that can battle him. The Warriors have some depth and the Mavs just don't. So this one, I don't even think it's going to be close. I got Golden State. They're going to keep their run going. Give me the Warriors in five games.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same. Obviously, the headlines will be Steph versus Doncic, but I think, like you said, there's just too much firepower on this Warriors lineup that Dallas probably isn't going to be able to hang with over the course of a series. So, yeah, hell of a year by them. I just don't. I think Golden State gets it done in five as well.
Now, last time I was on the show, we talked about the Jays winning every series and getting their 15 wins per month. But that feels like a long time ago. And this will be our T4. The Blue Jays have fallen to only one game above 500 at the moment and are now 7.5 games back of the first place Yankees in the AL East. The hitting has cooled off, and the pitchers seem to be getting hits at key times against them. Mike, should Jays fans start panicking?
I don't think panicking at this point makes, you know, really is worth it. It's kind of a tale of 2 months, right? April, they looked real good. May, to this point, not so much. Lose two of the Yankees last week and 2 of 3 to Tampa. This week sets up a little more favorably with Seattle coming to town for three and the worst team in baseball as of today, the Cincinnati Reds for three. So hopefully this will be what, you know, the cure to what ails them.
Yeah, the jump start.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, guys are still pitching well. Gausman, Manoah had two good outings against Tampa just in, you know, Sunday was an error from Chapman that kind of forced things to open up after scoreless six. But, you know, their big dogs are pitching well. The other guy I wanted to touch on because we chatted about him last week, Ryu came back on Saturday against Tampa, gave up one run, I believe, in 4 2/3. So a good return outing for him. And just gives a little more weight to the starting rotation.
Yeah, baseball's a long season, yes, and you're going to have these ups and downs. But having said that, looking at these numbers, not good. Blue Jays, 22nd in runs, 16th in hits, 22nd in on-base percentage. These are not the stats we were expecting from a high offense team with division and World Series aspirations. Not one starter in the lineup is hitting over 300. Chapman has 22 hits and 37 strikeouts. Bichette leads the team with 39 strikeouts. Now, I've talked about these two guys being strikeout kings. I know when they got Chapman, everyone was so excited. Oh, is he going to be like Donaldson? No, he's going to swing for the fences every single time, but he's going to get a lot of strikeouts, and he's on pace for a ton again. I'm not worried about the offense for the whole season just yet. I do believe they will be able to turn it around. These numbers aren't going to sustain themselves for the whole season. But let's remember and look back the summer of 2013. The Jays make that trade with the Mets. They get R.A. Dickey and Johnson. Donaldson comes in, Burley. They got plans to take over the AL. And it was the most disappointing season in franchise history. If this year doesn't turn around soon, we'll be in the same boat with that Jays team in 2013. They need wins. They need wins against the AL East teams that they're competing against. I mean, yeah, I know there's more opportunity for playoff spots this year, and they're still set up for one of the spots to sneak in right now, but that's not what they're about. That's not what they want to be doing. They want to be winning this division. They've got big plans, and the team needs to start dominating their opponents, and hopefully, as you mentioned, it starts with this portion of their schedule.
Yeah, for sure. Chapman batting 182 heading into this week. But I mean, you know, he does provide a lot defensively, minus Sunday. But it is early, and the offense, even in April, while effective, was not at its true potential.
They were winning games despite their offense. Really.
Right. Right. And as Clay touched on last week, a lot of one-run games have went in their favor. And, you know, I think eventually here, hopefully as we get through June, we open the roof up at Rogers Center. Always a lot more enjoyable when the roof's open.
And the balls start flying.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Now, Mike, we do got to touch on this. We got to talk Charlie Montoya here. I like him. I like Montoya. He lets the players play. He obviously listens and works well with the GM and front office on their thoughts on how to handle the pitching staff and how to handle the bullpen. And he's been a good soldier for them and a great guy to manage this team. But is this clubhouse turning into a bit of a country club maybe? Does this team need a veteran manager to come in and shake things up, put them on their toes a little bit, make these players a little bit more edgy out on the field? Charlie was brought in to help this young core of players grow and build up and become pros and allow them some playing time in the majors. But things have changed, and they've changed quickly, and expectations have changed. If they have a bad week here, Mike, especially against these teams that you mentioned, we might be talking about a new Blue Jays manager next week.
I think that might be a little premature. I mean, he was recently extended through 2023, and I know
just money, Mike.
Whatever. Yeah. But look, I mean, let's be honest here. 2020, they spent the whole season in Buffalo. Last year, between Dunedin, Buffalo, Toronto, the team, you know, has been a traveling show for 2 years. They're finally home now fully. Let's give it some time here. We get into June, July. You know, if you're around 500 at the All-Star break, a wiser baseball man once told me that you're always in good shape. And I think that would be a little premature. But with that, the expectations are incredibly high. So if this team continues to underperform in the weeks ahead, maybe the conversation resurfaces.
The Byron Nelson Classic wrapped up in Texas this past weekend as players get one more tournament in before the next major, and that will be our T5. K.H. Lee was the winner at the Classic for the second year in a row, defending his title. Lee shot a final round 63 to hold off great names like local boy Jordan Spieth, Hideki Matsuyama, and Justin Thomas. The scores were low and the play was great heading into the PGA Championship next week. Mike, do you like tournaments with such low scoring?
Not really. Mainly because I'll never hit those numbers myself, so it's not realistic to me. Unless I'm playing PGA Tour on PlayStation. once in a while, it's fine. You know, there are tournaments on the schedule where you have these, you know, very low scores. I like to typically see things a little tighter, you know, minus 7 to minus 12 kind of range, or even lower in certain cases, which we typically see in like the US Open, sometimes at the Open Championship, etc. But you know, Lee played well, 63 on Sunday, unbelievable, beat Spieth by one. to your point earlier, Seb Munoz shot a 60 on Thursday to take the lead.
That's the thing. He's minus 12 on the first day. I was looking at the leaderboard. I was like, these guys are minus 4 and they're out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, Lee, for me, you know, I think it was one there, par 5, 12th hole, puts it 12 or 5 feet from the green for, what was that, an eagle, I believe. And, yeah. You know, from there, he was just kind of
cruising.
Yeah. Yeah. So a good win for him, but good for Spieth to compete. I mean,
yeah. I mean, Lee joins Tom Watson, Jack Nicklaus, Sam Snead as the only back to back winners at the Byron Nelson. That's huge. Moves him up 88 spots in the FedEx Cup. So great for him. That's great. You know, the Eagles putting. But he kind of cruised to the victory. Spieth was the story, Mike. And I think that's what you're just about to touch on. He was the one everyone was following. Local Dallas kid. He loves playing in this tournament. Clearly wanted to win it. He did not have his best Sunday after being tied for the lead in the final group. But I got to tell you, Mike, his shot routine would drive me nuts if I was playing with him at a Muni on a Sunday afternoon in jean shorts. If I was paired with him, I think after 9 holes, I would tell him that my wife lost our dog and I had to leave the course to go back home and find that dog because I just couldn't watch his swing anymore. News, I don't have a dog, so I'd be lying to Jordan Spieth. It is so tough to watch. He scrambles around the course, always finds himself in tough situations, gets it on the green. He's arguing with Greller. He is a disaster to watch. Don't get me wrong, it's very entertaining TV, but that little pull back, stop, come back down, pull back up and swing drives me bonkers.
Seems to be working for him more times often than not, as he has been playing a bit more consistent over the past few weeks. Putting is still a bit of an issue for him. I think he, what, three putt within 7 feet, so that made me feel good.
One on the back nine.
Yeah, oh. Made me feel good about my performance on the greens this week, but, you know, I think it's a case, I think, you know, what you said earlier, he wants to win this tournament so badly, and sometimes that desire can affect you.
And he was right there.
Right.
And so now he goes into next weekend at the PGA Championship. He's looking to complete that career Grand Slam. I just don't know if I could put him in my, you know, we're going to do our picks here soon. Mm. I don't know if I can put him in my top handful of guys because he might have that first round blow up where he's all over the course and this is a tough track. I just don't know if he can be considered a favorite.
Well, thank you for showing your hand. But no, but that's the thing, right? Like he could easily go out and shoot a 5 under and put himself atop the leaderboard on round one. It, you know, it's hit or miss with him, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, and this week is the second major of the year, the PGA Championship at Southern Hills. The course is tough. It's going to be playing really fast. The heat is going to be way up there for these players. It's going to be a hot one there in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And the winds, too.
And the winds, you're right, because it is wide open. A lot different than what they were seeing at Augusta, where guys were complaining about it being cold. We know Phil Mickelson will not play. Seems like his PGA Tour might be tour career might be done. But we know that Tiger's playing, and he's been there for what feels like a week now. If you're following all the Tiger trackers on Twitter, it's awesome. Every one of his shots in the practice round is being looked at, so it's fun. I love major weeks, just the build-up, and put the Golf Channel on every night. They're live there at the driving range. They're showing all the guys grinding out on the putting green. They got their swing coaches there, and everything's getting good. And every major has its own thing. Like it's its own kind of, you know, unique situation. Augusta obviously has all the tradition and being the one major that's always at the same location. The Open makes it feel like you're walking back in time. The US Open has a high rough, small fairways and crazy greens. But what does really the PGA Championship have? It has the PGA pros from all over the country playing, which I know some of the players complain about because it makes the rounds longer. But this is kind of the least prestigious of the four majors, I would think. Not sure your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of felt the same of the four. That's why I kind of like the schedule change. Because, you know, typically the PGA would always run mid to late August, you know, initially. And it was kind of forgotten about. The Masters is obviously the the premier event. U.S. Open, Father's Day weekend, always a big deal. The Open Championship, you know, playing at some of the oldest courses in golf, and that's special. And then there was the PGA Championship. So I like, after they changed the schedule a couple years ago for the FedEx Cup and the playoffs, moving it up. And it gives, you know, it's kind of now obviously the second major on the tour, but it's not easily as forgotten, if that makes right. sense.
That makes total sense. I like the way you put that. And that was the best thing for this tournament. But let's remember that it's a major. It's going to count towards those major totals. It's got the best players in the world all showing up to play in it. And the course is going to be challenging. I can guarantee you that. We are not going to see minus 25 like K.H. Lee just did at the Byron Nelson Classic. We're going to see, you know, tough times for these guys to even break par. Some difficult holes that you're going to see some blow-ups on. And as Mike mentioned, if that wind gets going on Sunday, the back nine could be trouble for some of these guys.
Three holes in particular I pulled out here, Stark, just to touch on, just to show how crazy they are. And I should preface, they do say in a lot of cases, the toughest stretch on this course is 14 through 18. The 13th hole is like sometimes referred to as the last reasonable birdie opportunity. But look at this. You got two holes over 600 yards. Fifth hole, 656. I think there's trees involved, water as well. That's a par five, obviously. The 13th hole, which I mentioned, 632 yards. And 16, 527 yards, but that's a par four. So they do have some comparisons to Augusta, I've read, but
not as hilly, though. So
no.
You Tiger no. fans out there, you don't need to worry about him being absolutely gassed after walking the course. He's done it a bunch already this week. Looks good. He's got the foot joys back on. Not sure if you saw that, Mike.
Oh, hey, man. Not that I have foot joy, but I wear Echo. You got to have comfortable shoes. Even if you're riding a cart, you got to walk into it.
Pressing that gas pedal needs to be nice and soft.
Yeah.
Now, going into the Byron Nelson Classic, I was leading the season series of our golf picks 80-53. My boy Clay made my picks for me. He took Justin Thomas, who finished T5 for 5 points. Thank you, Clay. But he picked Bubba Watson and Luke List, who both missed the cut. He took Bubba Watson in his first pick. I was sitting in a bus driving from Whistler to Vancouver to catch my flight, listening to you guys. And he took Bubba Watson with the first pick. I almost told the bus driver to stop and pull over. I needed to jump out of the car and throw up. But still, he got me 5 points. So thank you, Clay. Mazzaro, you took Jordan Spieth, who finished second. Good 5 points. Scottie Scheffler was a T15, got you 1 point. And your boy, Willie Zalatoris, missed the cut. So now I'm leading 85-59. And I get first pick this time, Mike, since you had it last week there when you were battling out with Clay. So who am I going to take to start it off? And I'm going to take someone I think needs to start winning majors, needs to start winning big tournaments to get his name way up there. And that's Justin Thomas.
I'm going with my first pick, guy who I picked first last week, Scottie Scheffler. I would love to see him just run off a string of majors. So Scottie Scheffler is my first pick.
Yeah, win this one, man. Then the conversation of the Grand Slam of all four in one calendar year will be outstanding. And that'll heat up big time. He's playing great golf. I don't mind that pick at all. I like a guy who swings a good iron, because you mentioned there's going to be some long holes here. Guys are going to drive the ball in the fairway, no problem. But you're going to have a long iron shot into the green. I'm going to go with Colin Morikawa.
I'm taking a guy I like a lot. I may have more to say about him later, but he's been playing really well lately. Had a great week last week at the Byron Nelson. I'm expecting good things this week. Hideki Matsuyama.
You need a pair of those yellow shoes that he wears.
The Srixons? Are the Srixon make shoes? I don't even know. That's maybe his main sponsor.
Yeah, of course. Of course. All right, where to go next? Now, I don't want to take that crazy guy. I don't want to take that guy because he's struggling. This one's a little nuts. I'm going to go with someone who can putt the ball really well. He's going to have to judge the speed of it. And as long as he stays the course, he should be in the mix near the end. I'm going to go with Patrick Cantlay.
Next pick, I'm going Victor Hovland. I think he's, you know, another guy who's had a good season so far and, you know, always competes in the majors, gets his name up there, and I like him this week.
Perfect. We're going, and just so you guys know, because it's a major, Mike and I are going with a five pack here. So yep. We got a couple more picks. I'm going to go with Daniel Berger.
I'm going to take with my fourth pick, Shane Lowry. Always competes in the majors.
I'm going with newly married, ready to rock and roll, get back out in the course with his brother, Dustin Johnson.
I was looking at him with my pick. Oh, we didn't do it last time. I'm doing it this time. Tiger Woods, baby.
Wow. Have to check out what those odds even are for him. He's even in the mix. Plus 7,500. You can go get Tiger Woods right now. All right, Mike, that's awesome. So I got Thomas, Morikawa, Cantlay, Berger, and Dustin Johnson. You got Scheffler, Matsuyama, Hovland, Lowry, and Tiger Woods. Stick around. We had a fun little, not so fun. I shouldn't call it fun. We got a game with some statements that need to be made by yours truly. So stick around. I'm going to talk about it after this. I was off, and it was the biggest week of the year for my favorite team. I have a lot to say, and I don't want to hear from Mike anymore. So I get the floor, and here's the deal. Mike, any complaints?
I never even said anything to you. I'd even text you after the game.
Good. You can shut it now, Mike. I'm taking over the mic. Like many Leafs fans in Toronto and around the world, I was devastated with the loss on Saturday night. Another chance to move one step closer to the Stanley Cup, gone. Another chance to see the team I cheer for go on a run to create memories for me and my boys, gone. Another chance to prove to all the haters around the NHL who make fun of the Leafs and their fans that we are an elite team and an elite organization, gone. The last time the Leafs won a series, I had no kids and wasn't married. I was in university and enjoyed the games with my buddies at bars and celebrated the wins together. Toronto fans have now missed out on 18 years of these memories for people. These missed opportunities do not create new fans and even scare some away from staying fans. This is a big problem for our game and our fan base. But here's the deal. Winning at the highest level is hard, and only one team gets to hold that trophy at the end of the year. That's 31 other teams that need to evaluate their team and players, make the necessary changes, and try again next year. As Leafs fans, we are now in the Boston Red Sox and Chicago Cubs spectrum. Long-lasting franchises with so much history and so many loyal fans, but no success, no championships. Around the league, teams would laugh at the lovable losers, the Cubs, and jokes would be made about the curse of the Bambino that was holding the Red Sox back. But Leafs fans, ask any Cubs or Red Sox fan if all the losing and all the disappointment was washed away when they finally were able to win the World Series, and they will all say the same thing. The journey is what makes them fans. The down years made the final moment of winning that much more enjoyable. We are now at the point where some Leafs fans will go their full life without seeing a Stanley Cup. On the last podcast, I mentioned the story of my dad, who skipped the last game of the 1967 Stanley Cup, not knowing it would take this long to win another. Who knows how much longer it will take? But trust me when I say this. When they win, you are going to want to be able to say that you stuck with it for the entire journey, because that will make the final moment even more special. Go, Leafs, go.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
I just know that people are going to get all tied up about this team and say some things about not wanting to watch games, not wanting to go to games, not being a fan. But trust me, stick with it. Look at some of those Cubs fans that were in their 80s, 90s and had not seen him win, and the joy on their face when they got to see it. You want to be a part of that. So stick with it.
I think the disappointment lingers, but eventually, come October when the regular season is starting, it all gets renewed, right?
Love it. Love it. There's always next year. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bets of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, our boy, Clay, took Austin FC, I believe, and they lost. While Mike took the Jays on Friday night, and they lost. It's slump season, but let's bust out. And Mike, I will even let you take the tee since I was ball in hand last hole.
Yeah, I should still have it. With the golf theme?
Yep.
Hideki Matsuyama is my lock of the week to finish in the top 10 at the PGA Championship.
Nice. Good pick. Good pick. I like it. Let's go Matsuyama. And if he does win the tournament, you did confirm you will be wearing all yellow with yellow shoes on next week's podcast, right?
Or next time I golf. No problem, man.
Yep. Love a picture of that. Be looking out for Mike on the course wearing that. I'm going to Thursday night, May 19th, as the second round of the NHL playoffs start. Now, I'm a firm believer in a tough, hard series can take a lot out of you and cost you in the next round. That's why I'm taking the Florida Panthers in game one at home over the Tampa Bay Lightning, -165, but sprinkle on the Panthers in regulation at +100. Both are going to be winners for you on Thursday night. Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes,
full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.